Okay.
Oh. That's a legit surprise. I know sometimes people don't think I could possibly be caught by surprise every doggone time, but I actually can. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, making today as best we can make sense.
It shows that you still have a sense of whimsy. I love it.
That's right.
Once again, I can't get my thing together. Anyway, yes, and I'm Kimberly Adams, and thanks for joining us. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day in the week where we get to answer your questions. And we're starting with a question we got about our episode on voter suppression.
Ray in Maryland wants to know, how are gerrymandering and voter suppression related? Kimberly Adams, over to you.
So they are very related because often one begets the other. So gerrymandering is, just in case you don't know, the policy where legislatures, state legislatures, will draw the district lines. Now, they're supposed to use census data to inform the drawing of these district lines every decade after the big census. And so the Supreme Court, in previous rulings, has allowed those lines to be drawn on a political basis. And what that means is that political parties can then draw lines in their favor. And gerrymandering is when they draw those lines to get these crazy, weird shapes of districts that tend to concentrate the voters that they don't want into one district, and that but every other district has like an overrepresentation of the people that they like. Or another way that it works is they'll take a large group of, say, a Democratic-leaning city and split it into a million pieces with a bunch of Republican suburbs to make it still a majority Republican district. And I gave that example because it's a common one, but both parties have done this extensively over the years. So when a state is particularly gerrymandered, it tends to suppress the votes of the people where the gerrymandering isn't in your favor. And therefore, that allows the new majority to pass laws in their favor, even if they maybe didn't win a majority of votes. Did that make sense, Kai?
It did make sense. It did make sense.
Okay, good. I felt like I meandered a bit.
No. Look, this is super complicated stuff, and we're doing this in a 15-minute podcast, which, by the way, about which more later. But the net effect of all of this is to, number one, devalue some votes, number two, suppress other votes, and that whole concept of one person, one vote obviously goes out the window, as it has for many years, gerrymandering or not. But it's terrifically complicated and monstrously important. That's what
right, I mean. And there are a lot of states already, that are trying to address this. California and Arizona have put reforms in place that would prohibit politicians from drawing their own districts, instead use independent citizen-led commissions to draw the districts. Instead, the Senate Bill 1, the For the People Act, actually has a component that would require all states to have independent commissions draw their district lines. It's one of the points of contention that Republicans think that, or the Republicans who are not in support of this, say that the federal government shouldn't be in the business of telling states how to draw their district lines. And so, yeah, it's definitely an issue. Gerrymandering can be another tactic of voter suppression. Yep. And the outcome of gerrymandered districts can allow minority rule in an area, right, which then can beget more voter suppression laws.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. There we go. PhD thesis level stuff in like 3 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, Kimberly. All right. Next question. Pete in Southern California, here's what he has to say. I loved Kai's rant that reminded us about the Federal Reserve's dual mandate to manage inflation and work toward full employment. I know the Fed can change interest rates that affect inflation, he says, but what tools does the Fed have to support full employment? Well, the Fed has, so let's talk about the Fed for a second. The Fed does many, many things. It's a key regulatory body in this government. It does lots of, they like to call them listening tours, but surveys and tracking of what's going on in private businesses from all sizes, big to small. And then it does the headline thing, which is control what's called the federal funds rate. As far as the tools that the Fed has to affect employment, it's the federal funds rate. And Jay Powell, were he here, would tell you this. By keeping interest rates low, he wouldn't use these words because he doesn't like to say low. Central bankers like to say facilitating, accommodating monetary policy, right? But by keeping interest rates low, right? We let businesses prosper because, parenthetically, this is Kai here, money is free right now, right? Close parentheses. So when companies have easy access to credit, when money is basically free, they can then grow and expand. And that then, Powell would tell you, will bring down the unemployment rate. And what he will also say, and this is the last channeling Jay Powell thing I'll do here, he will say that the longer a recovery goes on, then you finally see in the later stages of a recovery, people at the lower end of the income spectrum getting those jobs, getting those salary increases, and that's the key thing. And that was the thing he said for the last year and a half of the previous expansion, right? The one that ended with the recession. He said, look, we are only now 10 years into this recovery, 11 years, the longest economic expansions we've had in this economy, only now are we seeing the bottom end of the income spectrum gain. And that's his mantra, right? He says this all the time. The longer the recovery goes on, that's when the people at the bottom have a chance. And that's why, in part, he's keeping those interest rates low, because that's what helps jobs. And that's what I got.
Now, the counterpoint to that is if everything works the way it's supposed to. But yes, there's also been that money is free, and we've seen a lot of corporations use that money for stock buybacks or use it to pay their CEOs more or pay, you know, just sit on the cash and make acquisitions instead of doing more hiring or paying their workers more or things like that. So, yes, but also I think the Fed and a lot of economists in general are really watching what businesses are doing right now because so many of the old models just don't really fit anymore. And, you know, think of all the businesses that took PPP money and, you know, didn't actually hire, or they went and did a SPAC or something like that. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. One more thing that you prompted me to mention, right? One of the side effects of interest rates being so low, and we're just talking the corporate side here about net effects. One of the side effects is that the only place to guarantee yourself a return right now is in the stock market. And so Powell and central bankers and a lot of economists call these asset prices, right? And what you're seeing now with interest rates so low, you can't make money on a fixed income investment because interest rates are so low. One of the only places to make real money is by investing in the stock market. And those asset prices, thus, are climbing as more money goes into the stock market. And we're, you know, last week we saw like three record highs on the S&P. And you're like, really? So, you know, there's lots of not great effects in addition to getting people at the bottom end of the income spectrum more help. I think
right.
I'm done. Yes, I'm done. Yes. Okay.
Okay. Huh. Although, good question. Really good question.
Yeah, great question. Super great question.
On to the next voice memo.
This is Jeff.
And Hope in Atlanta.
We have lots of questions, but the most pressing one today is,
why do medical offices still use fax machines?
Why don't they scan and send PDFs? Make us smart, and thank you so much for all that you do.
Oh my gosh, I recently had a situation where I received what was clearly a scanned document in the mail and from a medical provider, had to then take a photo of it with my phone to upload it to my other doctor via their web portal. Because one of the reasons they still use fax machines is because doctors and hospitals and various medical service providers are on all sorts of different systems that do not necessarily communicate well with each other. And so email is not always the safest. And if you're on a different electronic medical record system, then you literally have to fax a document back and forth. This is why we still have to fill out all these forms by hand every time you go to a different doctor's office. And I mean, that's one of several reasons. I mean, there has been legislation on the books, laws on the books, money allocated by the federal government for more than a decade, going on 20 years now, to convince doctors and hospitals to switch to electronic medical records. Not all of them have finished yet, and some doctors are resistant, and there are corporate interests in not letting those systems talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah. But it's crazy, right? Because you can literally refinance your mortgage from your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, like, print out a thing and hand carry it to your doctor or take it to the office, because who's got a fax machine at home? Well, some people do. I don't. And fax it over. And it's, it's like, you know how they used to have only full, maybe they still do. I don't even know. I haven't been on the East Coast in a long time. They only have full service gas stations in New Jersey. I think that's gone away now. It's like that. It's just like a relic, you know? Yeah. Anyway.
Although I guess I shouldn't underplay the privacy risk, because especially with all the ransomware and hacking that we've seen lately, and hospitals have certainly been victims of ransomware and had people seize up their whole systems.
Yep.
So
yep.
there's also Fair. that gives doctors Fair. And hospitals hesitancy. And, you know, so that's a thing. But on the other hand, when you do have to share all that information back and forth in such an inefficient way, it can slow down the care that you can give to a patient. So
we should do a story about that, the financial factors behind the lack of electronic medical records. You know, because it's real. It's real.
It is. It is.
Okay.
Wait, are you asking me to do that?
No. I have no assigning power around here. All right, one more. Let's hit it.
Hello, Molly and Kai. My name is Jonathan. I live in Jeromesville, Ohio. And
Jonathan.
I was wondering about your show, actually. I was listening to Monday's episode on Tuesday because that's how I live my life. And there seemed to be an acknowledgement of some kind of time limit on your recording. And I was wondering what that time limit is for the show, why there is a time limit on the show. I understand you want to be a short podcast, which I do appreciate. But having some kind of hard deadline time limit thing doesn't quite make sense to me for a podcast.
Old habits die hard.
Yes, totally right.
Old habits die hard, Jonathan.
Yeah, totally. Look, here's the deal. It's a very soft 15 minutes, but I try to keep it. And look, I understand that I'm the guy who always is like, all right, come on, we got to go. And that's on me. But look, and we go longer on Fridays, right? Because, you know, we get a little lubricated and, you know, whatever, things happen. But
cocktails.
Here was the pitch a year or something ago when I said to the bosses, we need to be on a daily distribution basis because there's so much news, there's so much stuff happening, this pandemic is drowning things out, and we need to just keep people sort of appraised of some of the other stuff. And I went in, and my pitch was 15 minutes, quick and dirty, no heavy lifting, no finely produced public radio pieces and all this jazz. It's just me and Molly, or me and Kimberly, or me and whoever, or Molly and whoever talking for 15 minutes, and then we'll get out of your hair. Because the reality is that while Kimberly and I, or Molly and I, get to have a good time for 15 minutes, Marissa Cabrera and Donna and Drew, Marketplace Heartthrob, Drew Jostat, and lots of other people do a lot of work behind the scenes so that Molly and I can have fun. And that's resources, and we haven't got a lot at Marketplace anyway, and so that's why we do 15 minutes. There we go. That's
also, what time do you start your day every day, Kai?
Oh, well, 6:15 my time in the morning, yes. There's that.
And what time is it now?
It is 3:43 in the afternoon my time.
Yeah, so, like, it's also, like, bless your heart, a real long day.
Yeah.
And you hosted a show in the middle of it. And, like, families and other commitments and things like that. So, all of those things matter, too, like the time and resources and energy of the behind-the-scenes staff, but also, like, this is it's an everyday thing. Like, it's not without energy and interest and resources and time. So, because we are all human is the answer.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, take us out here, would you?
Yeah, because that's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? That's really hard for me to say.
Isn't it, though?
We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, please keep sending your questions, emails, and voice memos. We'll take them both. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Yeah, there's the music again, Drew Jostat. Don't think we didn't hear that. Don't think we didn't.
It's really hard for me to say. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Grace Rubin is our intern, and today's program was engineered by Marketplace Heartthrob, boom, 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 Drew Jostat.
I don't even know how that stuck. Ben Talde and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is senior producing today. I think Bridget's in tomorrow. Yeah. So there we go. We're done. Boom.